Hello and welcome to the Niche Guarda YouTube podcast series. Once again, profiling the biggest topics of business worldwide, and as well the things that changes and the creators and entrepreneurs and visionaries that are pushing the boundaries and the concepts for our civilization and as well for our business, first of all, and technology levels. This is an initiative, as you know, my audience, powered by openbusinesscouncil.org and citiesabc.com. And we've been actually growing quite significant, but our focus is always get the best and learn what are the challenges and the opportunities you can have in our days of fast velocity, acceleration, and disruption. And today I welcome to our series two personalities that are actually my colleagues in business that have been with me for a long time, but as well two people that are actually touching one of the most important topics for business worldwide. And this is a topic that is a big elephant in the room when it comes to business, when it comes to what to do about it, and why it matters so much. I think everyone knows when you talk about carbon neutral, sustainability, ESG, and as well carbon registries, net zero, all these fantastic concepts are key for business. Some people might agree more than others, but the challenge is, what can we do about it? How can we actually really find platforms that actually can solve these problems in a very simple way that helps any business around the world, any country, and that actually helps us having some kind of security and some kind of even, I would say, compliance around these areas? Because everyone, I think, right now doesn't discuss or doesn't put in question these topics. But the challenge is, okay, how can I do it? And I welcome to our series again two personalities that are global personalities in industry. So Irinda Misra, that is the CEO of GMX Group and as well the founder of 014th, that is an organization created by GMX. And Asad Sultan, the CEO of Verdana, and as well the founder of the EcoConsortium.io. So these two platforms are complementary. There's a lot of PR being released, and this actually, we are in the interstice of a lot of these topics, especially with the COP28 in UAE being very close in the end of the 2023. And there's so much questions around this. This is probably a topic for a live event, and I will do more things about this because it's one of the areas that I'm particularly, even as an entrepreneur, I don't know sometimes how to do it. And I normally like to do my own work. So I think for my audience, for everyone listening to us, this is a key element. So I want to kick off with Irinda. So Irinda Misra, CEO of GMX, is a very, very strong profile working with governments, exchanges, trading and financial markets, and as well in technology and all the areas of technology. So he created the, just for people that never heard about 014. So 014 is a platform that is helping to achieve net zero by combining AI and blockchain to restore trust in carbon credit markets, addressing greenwashing, double counting, price transparency, vertical silos, and market fragmentation. And the 014 comprehends a global team that is passionate about these areas of how to use climate fintech. That is a concept that I will ask as well, but it's a very interesting concept as a catalyst to help decarbonize the world, especially with all the challenges that everyone knows that we're facing, but as well finding end-to-end solutions for businesses and organizations around the world when it comes to carbon credit exchanges, registry and participant aggregation, and as well being a platform ecosystem that helps enabling all of this. In the case of Azad Sultan, Azad Sultan is the founder of Verdana.io, which is an organization, and the CEO that I will as well profile, and that will be the visual profiles of both the organizations, that is creating advanced technology solutions and the platform for helping organizations, especially major, more mature organizations, finding ways of managing carbon solutions. And is as well the founder of Eco Consortium, that is a carbon registry that maintains project details and carbon credit related records digitally on behalf of standard bodies. And the Eco Consortium facilitates carbon credit transactions by connecting projects over a digital measurement, reporting, and verification, DMRV, which is a platform to project validators and verify appointed on behalf of standard bodies, and as well as helping carbon exchange to facilitate sales of certified carbon credits. So it's a lot of technical areas. This is actually, for people listening to me, I want to repeat, this is a critical element. Everyone needs to be on this. And if you're not, you're going to have consequences. Whereas if you want to work in Europe and you don't have any kind of registration, you might be blocked. If, for instance, in the UK, most of the banks are calling you and say, do you have something about carbon neutral? They don't know what, but they're asking you. And this is happening in Europe, is becoming mandatory. So even, for instance, if you are a company in Turkey, you want to do business in Europe, you have to have something about it. So for people listening to us, please take this serious. And you have two global experts, so learn with them. And of course, you have access to all their platforms. So after this intro, I pass the word to you, Irinda. So welcome again to the podcast. We have you here. And for people listening, please go to his interview, which is fantastic. I would like to kick off with you. So why did you create 014? And in a simple terms, why you think this matters and how can people use it? And tell us about it, of course, from your own voice.
Yeah, great. A pleasure to be here, Dennis, and a great opening question. With GMEX, we've been around 11 years as a market infrastructure provider, as you said, enabling exchanges all over the world. And then over the last few years, we got a number of approaches from whether it's governments, national exchanges, whether it's new venues to say, look, we want to set up a carbon exchange. Even though we're multi-asset, when we looked at this, we kind of said, well, actually, the carbon exchange is a little bit like the cart before the horse, because as you look into this, there's a much more complicated process upstream, you know, with the supply of carbon credits and assets, the validation of them, you know, something that Asad Wevedana will speak about, and then ultimately bringing them into the market. And, you know, coming from an organized markets background, the whole thing is very fragmented. There's a lack of pricing. And there's lots and lots of vertical silos, you know, with the banks doing their own thing, lots of exchanges, lots more wanting to set up as well. So we decided actually, as we looked into it, that actually combining our expertise, some of our core technology to aggregate, plus the exchange side, and combining that with partners like Vedana on the digital registry side and the measure, report, and validate side, created a whole vertical ecosystem that could address this problem, because there are lots and lots of fintechs and climate fintechs doing small parts of this ecosystem, but no one's providing a comprehensive solution. And what the market needs is they need a solution that's packaged for them that covers that whole vertical value chain. And that's why 013 has been launched.
And just before I go to you, Azad, so from your expertise, you mentioned a very key point. So there's a big fragmentation of the industry. People don't know how to look at these things. And then there's if you look at this, there's the global, there's the governments, there's the regulators, there's the organizations, and then there's the business a bit lost on this. And of course, there's a lot of people pretending to be experts and to understand this. But in the end of the day, I think everyone needs a bit of humility and try to find better ways of working together. So how do you think the 014 can help on this? And from your expertise, let's say for people that want to eventually start working with 014, how can they do it? I want to be very practical on that level, and then we go through bigger questions afterwards.
Yeah, let me give you an example, even though, you know, our starting focus is very much institutional. If you look at corporates, you look at financial firms. But I got a flight the other day and my airline said, well, you know, if you want to carbon offset, then, you know, click on the app when you land and you can offset your carbon emissions, you know, on the basis of that flight as well. But actually, when I click that button and I pay a fee, I have no idea where those credits are being bought. I've got no idea how my footprint's being measured and where that money's going as well. And so that level of transparency doesn't exist, whether I'm a retail consumer or that also holds true if you look at the institutional markets. So provenance is very, very important. You know, you speak a lot, Dennis, and you've written lots of books on blockchain and other related technologies. But now, you know, in this space, with the technologies we have today, AI, blockchain, and the like, IoT, there's much more ability to measure this accurately and show the end-to-end process flow. So for us, it's all about making it easier for suppliers of carbon credits that are bona fide and credible to meet buyers of carbon credits, get the best price for those projects, which then allows development, which has a great impact in terms of community development. But the other thing as well is now governments are waking up to realize that these assets are very valuable and they could be used as a means to generate income and reduce national debt and things like IMF loans as well. So, you know, so ultimately, bringing buyers and sellers together is very, very important, but also interconnecting these different spheres and jurisdictions, whether it's, you know, the UAE looking to do something with COP28, and ultimately there in Saudi, there's the oil companies and they're net buyers of carbon credits because they have a greater number of carbon emissions. But at the same time, if you look at Panama and Costa Rica, they're carbon negative, but those two jurisdictions can't interconnect efficiently. And there's a lot of African projects across Africa as well. And if we can interconnect those to buyers and finance, it's going to have an immeasurable impact on economies and on day-to-day lives. And that's one of the key reasons why we've established 013, to make that whole process seamless and a lot easier.
Thank you so much. And very good points that are critical for us. So Azad, so you come from a financial background, your result profile in this podcast, and I'll put the links to your bio. But you are the creator of Verdana.io and the Eco Consortium. So I mentioned about the Eco Consortium. Let me just, for people listen to Verdana, Verdana.io. Please go to the website. There's a lot of fantastic things there. And Verdana's mission statement is restore credibility to the carbon trade and kick off at Kyoto. And in spite of many issues, the carbon trade has become too big to fail. It means no more gaming the system. And the only way that's happening is by digitizing pain points. And that's what Verdana does. So this is, of course, taking from your from Verdana.io website. So Azad, give us a bit of context why you created Verdana, how Verdana is working, and then, of course, about the Eco Consortium.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Dennis. Nice to be back on your podcast. So Verdana is a... an interesting backstory to it, how I got involved. As you mentioned just now, I come from a capital markets background. And in fact, I was a trader of equities and derivative markets for 13, 14 years with big banks around the world. So when this initially came on my radar, you know, and after being a venture capitalist and having a portfolio of companies in the technology space that I look at, I listened to it. I found it a very interesting story. And then I asked a question, what's a carbon credit? You know, I had no idea about this market and the complexity and the nuances of it. And the journey that we've gone through in the last 18 months has allowed us to understand, as you read from our in our description, the pain points of this industry. And because we come into this industry with a fresh perspective, or, you know, as an outsider, you can say, we have been able to look at it and try to come up with solutions that the industry themselves have not found very apparent. Well, one, you know, extremely obvious solution, and this is where the philosophical alignment with 013 and GMEX's downstream sort of marketplace approach to the to digitization. Is we are digitizing, you know, the different pain points of the vertical chain. And we start from the upstream side, where information is reported into platforms, it's processed by those platforms, and then handed into marketplaces. So what Hirandar mentioned, you know, you can see the provenance of that data. You can see where the carbon, credit actually emanated from. You can verify that it has some value and it's the appropriate type of offset for you to use. So when you do indeed go in and buy your airline offset, now you have a lot more visibility through this type of a digitized, transparent, efficient, scalable process. You have a lot more visibility as to, you know, the type of instrument that you're actually purchasing. So with that backdrop in mind, the two components that we bring to the table here, and each of them has, you know, kind of unique functionality, is one, the Verdana platform, which is a digital measurement reporting verification platform. And just by digitizing that reporting capability and by focusing it on some of the big box categories of the emissions marketplace, In our case, you know, commercial facilities, for example, obviously nature-based as well. By focusing it on those marketplaces, we are able to, scale up and make a solution as accessible to as many number of players, and thereby encourage more market participants, both from the, you know, the user point of view as well as from the developer point of view. So that's what Verdana aims to do, and we've productized that over the 18 or so months that we've been in business. The second part, which is Echo Consortium, is we recognize quite quickly, and many of your viewers who are familiar with the carbon marketplace, you know, will immediately, you know, say that, yes, you know, reporting is just one part of it. We all do reporting, whether we're doing it in an analog fashion, whether we're doing it in a labor-intensive way, whether we're using consultants, one way or the other, we're either from a voluntary or a mandatory point of view, we're forced to, you know, do it, or we're very highly motivated to do our emissions reporting. But we recognized that simply reporting the emissions isn't enough. It helps you optimize your, you know, your energy consumption. It helps you reduce your emissions footprint, and that's the purpose of it. But in order to monetize the efficiencies that you're bringing into your process, you also need to go midstream and downstream into the certification and registration piece, and then into the market or the exchanges piece. And that allows someone who undertakes an energy efficiency program to then monetize that program. And, you know, that's a game-changing idea. For that to be made easy, accessible, cheap, for it to be digitized so that it's extremely scalable, for the turnaround period to be reduced from what it currently is, which is, can be months or years, into really a real-time sort of approach, I think that is an exciting idea. So we look at the overall arc of this approach is, first of all, it's a very, very big marketplace, right? When you look at the entire carbon marketplace, you're looking at a big segment. There are over 50 billion tons of carbon, of carbon emissions that are being, processed in the marketplace today. And that number is going to, you know, well, hopefully it'll decrease over time, but the marketplace around that number is going to grow exponentially. I mean, I was looking at some, you know, data before we got on the call, and today the carbon marketplace transaction value is estimated to be, it's around $12 billion. And the forecast is for this to be $30 billion within 7 years, 6 to 7 years. So that is a fairly, it's a fairly aggressive growth rate that this segment has. So anyone playing in this segment is playing in a big marketplace. And therefore, any solutions that are able to target the entire vertical chain of the segment are going to be very valuable solutions. So we recognize that if we bring some of the pieces that we have to the table in the digital measurement reporting verification side, in the digital registry side, and then we're able to combine with pieces that, let's say, GMEX is working on via their SecDex platform into the custody, the settlement, the exchange, the marketplace side. And if you're able to seamlessly connect those pieces together and target the entire vertical chain in the marketplace, then you're talking about, you know, something that can move the needle.
This is a fantastic explanation, and thank you guys both for putting very clarity around this. So how can we use both your platforms? And I know that is for people listening to us, it's a lot of names and brands. So we're going to put information and even frequently asked questions around this in both the interview, whatever you're listening to us. But let's kick off, and you touch both the pain that is happening right now in the markets. So let's look from, you have a background in finance and fintech, like you said, and actually you mentioned the term fintech carbon or carbon fintech, which is a very interesting concept. But independent of the concepts, let's say for people listening to us, and I want to make this very practical. So there's companies looking for funding, there's companies looking for business. And if you're looking for funding, definitely you need to have some kind of certification, which comes to what Azad and Irene have been talking. And the challenge is, okay, are you going to a carbon registry? Are you going to look at the directives for a government? Are you going to look for even a chamber of commerce, whatever stuff? And unfortunately, they don't exist. If you go to 20 different websites, you might have everyone saying that they have the solution. And what you guys are doing is very practical because you're solving problems. And I think that's what makes a strong business. So Irina, from your expertise and from your experience as well, and I know that you created this partly trying to solve problems that probably you're facing. Let's share that experience because I think the experience are really important for people listening to us, and all of us can learn a lot with that.
Yeah, it's a good way of looking at this because, I mean, if you look at this, I mean, in terms of different solutions, I mean, you know, technology has led to more fragmentation, but what technology fragments, it can certainly knit together as well. And as we look at it, finance is very, very important, as you said, in this whole industry. But there's always a chicken and egg because there's lots and lots of projects. But if you're a certain project that can generate carbon credits and it is a sustainability project, let's say below $25 million, you struggle to get that finance. So one of the things that we're doing, and you kind of intimated this, I mean, standards are very, very important. And Asad and I spend a lot of time looking at that and seeing how we can work with existing standards bodies, how we can also, with that feedback loop, bring in our learnings into that and enhance the process. So one of the things we've recently done market side is we've said, okay, great. There's a lack of standards on the market side. So we've partnered up with the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, and every corporate and institutional client in the world is very familiar with ISDA agreements, whether it's for swap contracts or other forms of derivatives. And we've affected the world's first trades using smart contracts on that ISDA voluntary carbon credit standard. Now, why is something like that important? Something like that's important because no standards really exist for the forward market. It's very much, what I call is like boxing organizations, the WBC, IBF, WBA. So when you apply a very credible market standard to that, all of a sudden it instills trust. But it also now means those forward contracts can now be executed against a methodology, which also means that money into those projects can come in a lot sooner than it would if you were waiting for the certification verification process to take effect, even though what Asa is doing with Adana is accelerating that day on day, and it'll continue to happen across that supply chain. Getting those initial credits verified is a bottleneck, as Asad alluded to. So once you get that financing in a lot sooner, that helps kind of create that virtuous cycle where those project developers that can use that capital unlock more projects, generate more potential carbon credits, and aren't then wasting their time trying to look for finance everywhere, which obviously can come as well in support of this, whether it's private finance or public-private. But the whole thing becomes very symbiotic. The same reason why we partnered with Adana as well, because they've done an immense amount of work on the supply side, which I said we'll talk about on supply side standards. So when you combine the two, you have harmonization of standards between the supply side and the demand side. And what we've then done is, we've looked at this and when we looked at this, we said, it's really, really interesting. We've seen smartphones develop from, the bricks that we had in the 80s. Some of your viewers will be a lot younger than this, so they might not remember it, the millennials and so forth. But if you look at how mobile phones have developed over the last few decades and the technology we have now that's very smart and where it's now going with AI, if you compare that to market infrastructure and then, you take that one step further and compare that to the infrastructure in this space, it is very, very, very disorganized and very, very early stage. It's really interesting. I was looking at one mangrove project in Mexico, really great project, lots of community development, but they're using spreadsheets to calculate the carbon credits. That's been emailed to a registry that's also using spreadsheets. And then that's being inputted into a registry using a front end. And just imagine what end-to-end automation could do with something like Adana provides on the registry side, and then what we then provide on the market side, because those credits are then made available to trade. It's easier for them to settle using our technologies like our asset settlement network and trading them on the market. SetDex has been mentioned. It's a regulated exchange. So all of this is about trust. All of it's about standardization. All of it's about ease of access and distribution.
And you touched the very important thing. First of all, there's the challenge of understanding how it works. And like you said, the other parts is going to Excel sheets and all these different things, because it's a bit of a nightmare on that. So Asad, I know that you build Verdana as a very cutting edge platform to look at these things. And effectively, it's really impressive, the technology you guys did, and probably will have a separate call about that. So picking what you just said, how can we fix these problems? And for us, how it looks, for instance, what Irina is doing with 013, what are you doing with Verdana.io, and as well the Echo Consortium? Because that's very important for people looking, okay, I can go here and find the problem, solution to this, solution to that, and the solution to that. Because people want concrete things. Unless you are an industry expert, then you can talk about this for hours. But people want solutions. And even if you are an industry expert, you need to have a departing point. Like you said, Irina, this is actually quite complex. If governments cannot tackle, how can a business tackle for them? So that's the challenge that you guys are solving. And of course, if you are successful, which I think you are starting to be, that's a big business here as well. Azad, if you could explain.
Thanks, Dennis. And yes, I'm going to pick up on a few things that Hiranda said and expand upon it. And the idea being to kind of explain to the viewers and also to the marketplace how we feel that we can tie in these individual pieces into a common solution or into an integrated solution. There was a joke that we had before we got on the call. Maybe Hiranda wants to repeat it again about what the governments are trying to do in the marketplace with carbon and what in fact they are doing, which unfortunately isn't enough. Certainly the best intentions and some of the brightest minds on the planet. So taking absolutely nothing away from that. But really the fact is that you're not going to solve this problem unless you go to scale. Given that we have a very large problem to solve, and that problem only gets solved when both the buyer and seller side or the demand and supply side of the marketplace is fully addressed, then only you'll see the needle move. I use this analogy a lot, and people seem to like it, so I'll repeat it here. Today, the carbon marketplace is full of Savile Row tailors. You know, they make a very bespoke product, and it's designed to your particular taste. It's of a high quality, but it's expensive. It's not scalable. It's not something that's easily brought to a large marketplace. It's away from the common eye. What we are trying to do by the digitization of these platforms is by making less, going away from the Savile Row model and going more into the Zara and H&M model. We are bringing it to scale and allowing for product to come to the largest possible audience. And only by doing that, by creating this diversification of products, by creating this greater penetration to the marketplace, can we now fill the demand curve, the white space under the demand curve, so that supply and demand are more naturally met. Today, the market is not transparent, it's not efficient, and it's not scalable. So what we're doing in 013 and these type of alliances that bring an ecosystem together around the marketplace is that we are making it efficient, we're making it visible, transparent, and we're creating scale. So just repeating those three things to make people understand why this is so important. Because once you have efficiency, you have price discovery, you have a more harmonious matching of the buyer and seller. Once you have diversification of product, then you can match the type of offset that you need for your particular enterprise so that you can make it net zero, or you can achieve your sustainability targets. And by making it accessible, by making it cheap, and by making it effectively turnkey, that's the goal that 013 has, and that's why we think that it has a really reasonable chance of finding not only the big users, which everyone is currently targeting in the so-called Savile Row marketplace, but also finding all the users who are currently sitting on the sideline and encourage them to join the marketplace.
So that's the key element, and I appreciate this. A lot of learning for people listening to us. So let's go right now to the bigger problems. I think, like you guys discussed, the biggest problem is, and the elephant in the room is definitely that governments don't agree on standards. It's not that they don't agree. Probably they're trying to agree, but with all the geopolitics, it's not so simple. I think we cannot just blame anyone. We are all part of this. So from your expertise, and I know that that's why as you in India create 014, and in your case, Azad, there's the Eco Consortium as well. So this is these are initiatives that try to balance regulators, governments, and a lot of other organizations that can actually get better knowledge and education, because a lot of this is about education as well. So from your expertise, both of you guys come from major financial global organizations. I know you've been working with London Stock Exchange. So probably there's nothing bigger in the planet. And as well, Azad, you work with Citibank and a lot of different organizations. So there's the financial, like big corporations, there's the regulators, there's the governments, and then there's the kind of the exchanges. So on this scenario, a bit for education of our audience and as well to understand how complex this is, how can we actually find a good balance to create, first of all, to eradicate the fragmentation, and second, a lot of scams that exist. There's some scandals that were, I don't want to talk about the negative, but more on the positive side, what would be the, let's say, the steps that you guys highlight with your expertise and as well the work you've been working on this? Irina, if you want to start.
Yeah, sure. No, it's an excellent question. I mean, we've got a lot of government-to-government engagement at the moment. And as Azad will support, many, many national governments want to set up their exchanges and registries in this space for carbon credits, other climate-related products. You know, on the one hand, that creates fragmentation, but it is a good thing because it helps to aggregate the supply of projects that are typically regional, local, and at national level into a single aggregated pool. But of course, the buyers and sellers, as my example between the Middle East and my example using Panama and Costa Rica highlighted, could be separated. But equally, as these liquidity pools, as these registries set up locally, there is a chance for some foul play. We're not saying that happens, but in some cases, credits could be manufactured, right? So how do you, if you've got a localized, national standard, how do you instill trust? So I think, very much you need those local constructs. You need that local validation point and that aggregation point, but you also then need that kind of international rubber stamp. And that's where international standards or using technologies like ours to provide that kind of rubber stamp aligned with those standards is very, very important, because there are a lot of G2G arrangements being made bilaterally on buying and selling carbon credits, but they're not always transparent, as Azad alludes to. And really, there's nothing to hide here. Increasingly, the world's eyes are on this. There's lawsuits being filed in the US now for companies making net zero claims that didn't necessarily exist or play out. So increasingly, organizations are out there measuring this. With our technologies, you can measure, report, verify this. It's very, very transparent. You know exactly what's being produced, where, to what extent, who's buying it, measuring to what degree their own emissions are being offset by buying. And really, that data and that transparency becomes very, very important. So I think, we're big proponents now of governments doing this, and certainly we can help and enable them as we are doing. And there's some interesting announcements to come. We've got technology in the middle of that can aggregate these different jurisdictional plays, as well as some of the exchanges. And, not forgetting 98% of the market is over the counter at the moment as well, even though an increasing amount is coming on exchanges. But it doesn't mean all these have to be mutually exclusive. What we're now doing is enabling multiple registries to connect, multiple exchanges and multiple participants, be they corporates or financials. And that creates a fantastic virtuous circle for economic development, which ultimately even national governments can't deny is very, very beneficial.
Amazing. And I think this is the key element. So Azad, any other things that you've been learning during your journey on this? Because I know that you guys became global experts on this and everyone can learn a lot of this.
Yeah, no, I think Hiranand touched on some good points. Let me follow up on one of them in particular. So from a government point of view, there's a trend of governments joining what the so-called climate action clubs or climate aspirational clubs, ambitions clubs. And what these are is you have common objectives on sustainability that clusters of countries will sign on to, and that then becomes a sort of standard, if you will, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's a very good idea. The EU is a good example of a climate club that functions quite well and, you know, sets a very valuable marketplace for the participants in it. Similarly, you have climate clubs that, you know, are in different parts and regions of the world. What that tends to overlook, though, is that when you cluster a number of countries with common objectives with a common problem, then they tend to be just on one side of the fence. So if you had, for example, an Arab Nations Climate Club, that Arab Nations Climate Club would largely be buyers of carbon credits to offset, let's say, you know, the oil and gas production that, let's say, the GCC the GCC dominates. And similarly, if you had a climate action club from, let's say, Central America, those would be producing carbon credits through their natural resources, their rainforests and nature-based assets. So the idea is with the interoperability that a platform that like Zero 13 offers, we can match those two groups together so that the producers of carbon credits and the users of carbon credits can offset themselves through their so-called, you know, NDCs, their nationally determined, targets. And so that, I think, is another very powerful idea, that something like Zero 13 or Zero 13 as a platform can address, and other alliances, for example, World Bank's Climate Action Data Trust Alliance, which is gaining a lot of momentum. So historically, you know, you have a number of associations that that are already functioning, like the UN FCCC Association or Alliance includes a lot of the nature-based assets that are currently in the marketplace. But like with any one particular solution, it tends to be aligned towards the interests of those participants, right? So there's no coincidence, by the way, that, you know, today we have, an abundance of so-called bad credits in the marketplace that have come from nature-based assets. It's no coincidence that those are the most complex ones to calculate, right? You don't rely just on one factor to, you know, to calculate those carbon emissions. It's a multi-factor and a very complex calculation methodology that goes into something like a rainforest, you know, the coverage, the satellite data, the terrestrial data, the, you know, the climatic data, the organic data. And so, you know, when you take all of that into account, you have a complex problem. And because you have a complex problem, there's the opportunity to game that problem. And when you game that problem by taking advantage of the fact that, again, we don't have the transparency, we don't have the, you know, the efficiencies. Because of that, you then have an end product that that isn't as effective as it should be. So what we'd like to do by synchronizing the different producers of assets in the carbon marketplace and the different consumers of asset in the marketplace, we'd like to create like a wider amount, a wider distribution of products, so that you can have the appropriate solution for the appropriate need.
Fantastic. And I think what you mentioned, for instance, World Bank and all these different organizations is really critical, because there's a lot of fantastic initiatives, but the challenge, like you guys said, is the fragmentation and making sure all of this speaks with each other. So I think for the last part, finishing 1 hour, I definitely want to take two probably more practical on the live where we can actually discuss the challenges But before we wrap up, so one of the things that Zero14 facilitates is infrastructure, carbon credits, transparency, cybersecurity, aggregation, and transition. So and you create as well a concept that I like a lot, Sustainify. So there's a lot of good marketing there, but as well as simplifying this. So let's say, and coming back to the practicalities of these six areas that you guys are fostering, how can, let's say I'm a business, whatever I am in the world. Of course, one thing is a public company, the other thing is an individual company, but how can they get in, of course, subscribe and start getting into Zero14, do Verdana, and how can you guys help? Because in the end of the day, it's about that.
Yeah, for us, it's very straightforward. Everything is cloud first. It's distributed as well, so it's very easy to test, connect a simple form to subscribe for then access to SetDex as an exchange and other liquidity pools. It's just simple KYC KYB onboarding and that's a kind of standardized process in line with the regulations of that particular exchange. So there's already been a number of announcements where there's participants connecting, everything from corporates to those firms that have inventory in the registries, such as those that Verdana enables as part of its Echo consortium, where there's a large number of projects, and growing that are very, very high quality. And we're providing those to buyers, which range from banks to large corporate firms to medium-sized firms as well. It's really, really interesting. You know, I was at a conference in Budapest of primarily exchanges last week, and I got engaged with the senior level execs from Taiwan and Thailand, and it's really, really interesting. There's a call to action in countries like that, much as there is in many, many other countries, because now, as you mentioned as well, the EU will impose tariffs on the large carbon emitters, and so as a large export market, they realize that they have to do something, and they have to do something now. So in that regard, you know, there's a number of exchanges as well at a local level aligned with their governments that we're enabling. And that also opens up a wider ecosystem of buyers and sellers that are easy to onboard.
Fantastic. Asad, from your side.
Yeah. So let me also switch gears and go into a little bit of detail now as to how the, you know, how the platform actually works from our side, the components that we bring in. So I mentioned Verdana. Verdana is the digital MRV, as we call it, MRV, measurement reporting verification tool that we have. That digital that we also have done one more thing with that in the marketplace. We have digitized the methodologies around commercial facilities. We picked that asset class because I think, Dennis, you know, but Verdana was initially launched for a regional data center, and so data centers suck up a lot of power, and they, you know, and they process a lot of information. So, you know, we have built this, we've kind of over-engineered it for commercial facilities as an asset class. That includes, you know, office towers, you know, residential complexes, malls, obviously data centers, cold storage, et cetera. It's a big asset class. Like one out of every four tons of emissions, you know, comes from this particular, category. So we have targeted that category and digitized the methodology for certifying the emissions from that category that goes through our measurement reporting verification tool and directly onto digital certification bodies. In the case of Echo Consortium, we have tied up our joint venture partner is Echo Registry. Echo Registry has been around for 6 years. They've issued 60 million credits. They've retired about 60% of that. They've got a great reputation in the marketplace. In fact, the World Bank had initially pushed us in their direction, and since then we found a very synchronous way of working with them, and we're very much aligned philosophically as to how we want to approach this the combined solution. So by being a digital validator on the certification platform that issues the credits that are on the Echo Registry ledger, we make that entire process seamless for the methodologies that we have digitized. In this case, we have our commercial facilities energy emissions label, which is the methodology around commercial facilities, but that can be expanded. We'd love to work with other partners who can take and digitize methodology for sustainable agriculture, for nature-based solutions, for manufacturing, for renewable energy. And those digitized methodologies can then go through seamlessly the ECHO consortium platform through the certification body and then out onto the registry. Once those credits are issued on the digital ledger, then it falls into the entire digital ecosystem that GMEX is engineering with SecDex, not only the marketplace side of it, the exchange, but also the, you know, the settlement, the custody, the infrastructural side around that, that allows other marketplaces to tie into us as well. So by having this backbone or this foundational infrastructure in place, we are able to access kind of a hub and spoke strategy. Other players in the community can simply, you know, plug into us and utilize the functionality that our tools have. So when you asked me at the beginning to talk a little bit about the National Carbon Registries, which is something we just launched in Malaysia, and the idea is like this. So we think, you know, that these are very valuable marketplaces for countries to want to keep within their own jurisdiction, or regions to want to keep within their own jurisdictions. It's just like, you know, if you have your own stock exchange in your country, you know, you don't want all your countries going and listing on the NASDAQ or New York Stock Exchange. You want to have your own capital markets exchange as well, because there's an entire value chain around that enterprise. And similarly, the carbon marketplace is a very valuable marketplace. So instead of offshoring all of the assets to be certified elsewhere, to be traded elsewhere, for the economic benefits, you know, to be distributed outside of your jurisdiction, there is more and more of a philosophy amongst, you know, countries in particular and regions to keep the value within their own ecosystem. So we encourage countries to have their own national registries where they can issue their own credits, authorize their own credits. And that way, if you're a buyer within that marketplace, you can come right in and participate in it. It will encourage so many more participants who are now, you know, not in the market today. As Hiranda mentioned, a lot of it is OTC. 90 plus percent of the marketplace is OTC. And what is that? It's large assets coming online and large brands picking them up. So you've got the global oil and gas companies, your Shells and Chevrons of the world, who are like hoovering up all the credits. And you've got, you know, big nature-based assets that are being made available to them. And it's largely, you know, done behind closed doors. We want to bring all of that in the public view. We want to bring all the market participants into it, so that even if you're an SME, this is where our conversation with OBC, Open Business Council, is so relevant, because Open Business Council, your platform, is a digital marketplace for enterprises. So enterprises come in there for all kinds of digital services, but clearly their sustainability actions, their net zero aspirations, is one of those services. And they can now participate in an extremely efficient open marketplace where today they have no tools to do that, right? They really don't have any options to do that except for trying to develop their own offset programs or projects themselves, or you know, buying credits from exchanges, you know, and then going through an auditing and retirement process. Well, we are just simplifying all of that with these tools. But we ourselves are not the national registry. We ourselves are not the certifying or authorizing bodies. We're simply the tool that allows you to do those things very efficiently, to do those things very cheaply, to do those things very transparently. So when we started this in Malaysia, we went to the Malaysian government and said, please issue your own credits so that people in your marketplace can then participate in it. So if Petronas wants to buy $1 billion of credits, they don't have to go to New York to do that. They can come and do that in their own marketplace here. They can do that in the Bursa, and keep the economic value of those transactions within your, you know, your ecosystem, the Ministry of Finance, your tax authorities, they all benefit from that. So you authorize your credit, but you simply use my tool to make that process extremely efficient. and we'd like to proliferate that in other places. Interestingly, at our launch of Echo Consortium in Malaysia, we had another South Asian country representative attending the launch from Bangladesh, in fact, and they decided to stay on for 2 or 3 days after the launch, saying that, hey, we like this idea so much, we want to lead with this and take it back home with us and offer this to the Bangladeshi government so that they can also issue, because they have large nature-based assets like the Sundarbans, the mangroves, et cetera, which are the largest in the world, really. And so for them to monetize those assets using tools like this and keep the economic value in their countries is a very powerful idea.
No, fantastic. And I appreciate this. And congratulations about the achievements in Malaysia. So let's use the case study on Malaysia. And I know that we passed away the time, but this is just two last questions or three, if you guys can do it. So on Malaysia, let's use the case of Malaysia. So I'm a company in Malaysia. How does it work? And you, like you mentioned, if I'm a company there, I can do everything there. So that case study is very interesting for other governments around the world, because a lot of countries don't have that. Even in Europe has this abstract stuff. But okay, if I'm a business, where do I go? So, and I think if you could use that case study as a way to explain companies how it works, and I'm sure for people listening to us from around the world, they might be interested to take that to other countries. And I'm sure the experience there, and you mentioned as well the World Bank, I'm sure there's a lot of synergies there.
Sure. So I'll just give you a quick example how it works. So Malaysia has, for example, nature-based assets. Let's say there's sustainable farming in Malaysia that goes through an accredited process of bringing energy efficiencies into it, bringing so-called additionality into their process that generates creditable credits on carbon, right? So now they need to submit those into a certification platform so that they first need to generate that data, they need to report that data, they need to certify that data, and they need and once it's certified, those credits can be issued on a registry that then makes it available to marketplaces so they can trade that data. And therefore, they get an income from following the process for generating carbon credits, right? So they're doing that already today, but they're doing it in a sort of very analog fashion. So, a large agricultural company that's adopting these methodologies, adopting these processes, they would hire a consultant. Their consultant would then, create both a hardware and a software sort of, solution, whereby they collect all of the data that's being generated. They measure that data, they report that data, they verify that data. Then they submit that into a certification body. That certification body will review it, will authorize, will certify and then pass that on to the registry or the front office where the credits will then be issued. Once those credits are issued, then they find marketplaces that are in their alliance or that accept the credits that come from that particular certification body. And today, those bodies, that entire process is dominated by two or three big players, namely Vera Gold, IREC, they're like 80% of the market, if not more, actually. That analog process exists today. It just does not exist. It's just not available to enough players. And there are too many parts of the economy that sit on the sidelines because the value proposition of going through that whole process is just not very compelling to them, right? So if I'm a facilities operator, even though I produce, like I'm a data center, I produce a huge amount of energy emissions through my power usage, but I'm not, and I am adopting energy efficiency processes to reduce that power consumption and make it more efficient, but I'm not, submitting that for verification, for certification, and then thereby monetizing it. Why? Because the cost and the time and the effort of doing that is significant. And so rather than take that significant effort, I simply let that sideline. I'm happy with a lower, power bill. And that's where the story ends. Now, when we come in and offer essentially a digitized solution for people to kind of plug and play into, it encourages not just the big owners of assets like the nature-based assets, but also the other parts of the economy to participate in the process. And it just reduces a lot of the frictionality involved. It reduces a lot of the turnaround time involved. It reduces a lot of the costs involved. So thereby, that's why I follow the same theme. We bring transparency, we bring efficiency, we bring scalability. And we do it by all those things.
And just to add to that,
yeah, go ahead, Irina. Yeah.
It's interesting because once that process is digitized and that inventory is part of a construct that's now effectively in, let's say, Malaysia, a digital registry, it solves a lot of challenges because with the analog process, let's say the Bursa recently launched its carbon credits market. Of course, there's lots of supply in Malaysia, but there was a limited number of demand side clients. But now all of a sudden you can connect into this hub and spoke model with 013 and you can distribute those credits all over the world and tap into demand in a distributed fashion, wherever it may be in any part of the world. Then subsequently, you can then use the settlement network that 013 has, because there's a big problem about, you know, I deliver, you pay, but who delivers first and who pays, right? And how do we settle this? So now all of a sudden, you can also do that digitally and link that to whether it's deposit tokens at a bank or it's actual fiat currency locked in accounts and pre-funded. So you get that settlement finality so that those selling the credits get the funds as well seamlessly wherever they may sell them across the world. And then subsequently, you know, everyone speaks about blockchain as one ubiquitous technology, but, you know, as you and I know, and as Asad knows, there are multiple blockchains. So also using 013, we can now go cross-chain and swap transactions. You know, if the buyer's on one chain, the seller's on another, you know, because the credits are there, you can now affect those transactions irrespective of the chain. So, and use APIs to link in some of those analog players as well, so that you're not excluding those, because of course they're very, very important and they have assets there, or some of them as venues or buyers will have some degree of demand for liquidity. So when you bring all that together, it creates that kind of network effect, which will help grow the market. But ultimately, you know, there's one other point there that's important. You know, you mentioned Sustainify, but sustainable finance is important. You know, finance does help this whole process because project development needs finance. Some of the processes need finance as well. So when we speak about national stock exchanges, one of the questions I got asked at this event by a national stock exchange was, why is this relevant to us, or why are we relevant to this? Of course, there's the example of Bursa Malaysia that's launched its own carbon credits exchange, whereas Bursa Malaysia is a securities and derivatives market, but obviously an exchange operator. In Saudi Arabia, Tadawul, the national stock exchange, has partnered with PIF, the Sovereign Wealth Fund, and they'll be launching a market starting with a voluntary auction that they'll run in Kenya initially. So all of a sudden, existing stock exchanges are launching markets. But one of the other responses I gave to that question was, and as Asad pointed out, these national exchanges are important because they're linked to finance. So we can now work with them. We can distribute out green bonds and project bonds, which, again, in tandem with those forward financing contracts, brings much needed capital into the ecosystem, and then which also then in turn drives growth.
Fantastic. So one last question, and this is amazing. I think we went a bit further, but this is a really great context. Even for me, I'm learning a lot. So I thank you guys for both your insights and experience. So one last thing, we have the Echo 28 and there's a lot of things happening as we speak on these initiatives. So from your experience, I think for people listening to us, because a lot of these things is cut the noise and go directly to the point. So I think there's a clarity about how to do if you are a business, if you are in the business on the investment, there's a lot of advice. But about these big global organizations, and a bit more a macro question, what can we expect on a global level, or should we not expect anything? Of course, this is a non-political part. I'm talking more on the practical part as a business leaders that you are, and then we all are probably in all our audience as well in this channel.
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's interesting. You mentioned politics, but right at the start of this podcast, you mentioned, geopolitical divides. And I think, whereas what Asad and we are doing is very much neutral and it's cross-jurisdictional, and that's really, really important. Of course, there are clubs, that there are some of these initiatives around geopolitical lines and even national lines and within national countries, even regional lines as well, actually. But that's where, choice is really, really important, because there are going to be a multitude of standards. There will be multiple marketplaces, there will be multiple registries. The ability to interconnect some of those initiatives is important. One of the things that we're discussing along with Asad and the team is something called an Islamic sustainability club. Something like that's important, because of course we mentioned finance and green bonds, but sukuks, which are Islamic bonds, are another means of really strong financing. We've got an investor coming into us that's heavily engaged, and the whole structure of investment, even into us as a firm, is going to be Sharia compliant. So that actually helps unlock much needed capital that can be accepted across the Islamic world and beyond. And those clubs themselves can be interconnected. So we see, COP28, given the fact that it's in the UAE, as a key player to advance that agenda as well. And certainly a lot of the work that we've done, and there's a research paper coming out soon, will lend itself to that. But of course, UAE can't do it alone, much as they've realized and much as they've cited. And this is all about interrelationships and bringing the world together, because climate's a global problem. It's impacting all of us, and it needs to transcend those geopolitical boundaries for us to really have an impact.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, COP28 is very exciting, because from our point of view, it's very exciting because it forces the entire market, the entire industry to get around solutions in a very condensed time period, right? We have 5 months leading up to the end of November when COP28 hits, and even 013 has come into being at exactly the right moment, and we're pushing it forward. In fact, Narendra and I are going to be in Dubai next week. We're pushing it forward very aggressively so that we are in a position to start showcasing the solution in time for that, because the platform will be there. The entire, industry will be there. The entire, the entire visibility of the world will be on the event. So that encourages all of us to move a lot faster. What normally would take 6 months to develop and do deals around, we can now do in 6 weeks. And it's not just us, but the rest of the marketplaces on that same, kind of under the gun to move, in line with it. It is catalyzed by the fact that it happens to be in Dubai this year. It happens to be hosted by the UAE, and there is a lot of action around the clean tech space in Dubai. There is a lot of funding around that on the buyer side, with ADNOC, for example, having one of the most ambitious offset spend programs anywhere on the planet. You have a number of the service providers hubbing around the Dubai and the ecosystem that it's created. So there's a virtuous cycle that's being precipitated by COP28, and we certainly want to be in the slipstream of that, So I think that's a very positive thing for us. It's also good from the point of view of the industry, right? Not just enterprises within the industry, because things are moving fast for us and we're able to do things quickly and generate value for ourselves and hopefully the rest of the marketplace as well. But, I think the world has also become a bit cynical about this idea that, we're just going to go from annual event to annual event. I mean, I get invites, and anybody in the business really gets invites to so-called climate summits every month. There's one in some part of the world, and they're all kind of repeating the same challenges, but not getting enough space between them to find the solutions to those challenges. And I think that there is this awareness that it can't continue like this, that there has to be we have to be able to kick that can significantly down the field for us to, you know, point to the progress that we're making. Hiranda mentioned it, you know it, everyone knows it. The climate change problem is existential. It's not going away. We have to, the sooner we can get on the front foot of it and solve it, or at least, you know, begin to move the needle in the right direction, you know, the sooner we'll be able to, you know, address this really existential problem that we're facing in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So the clock is ticking. There's no point waiting around. And fortunately, you know, events like COP28 are catalyzing that for us. And so we're trying to keep our eye on the ball to, you know, make something of it.
Fantastic insights, guys. I appreciate this. A lot of learning. We're going to try to put this in really good content for people to digest. And for people listening to us, please go and act on this. There's a lot of platforms, but you have two experts here that you can learn a lot. And these platforms, of course, I can only recommend it. Of course, it's some bias, but the quality of the technology and the experience of it as well, as you've been hearing, I think you just read the bios and look about the product. There's a lot of things you can do and that you can act and get solutions. Thank you, Hiranda. Thank you, Azad. It's been an honor to have you here again.
Thank you, Dennis. It's been an absolute pleasure.